Attention, listeners. Do you ever find yourself struggling to decide what to watch on a Saturday night when you're in the mood for horror? Or perhaps you're trying to round out your own horror film education. In either case, I'm sure you'll be able to make some great discoveries in my 10x10 horror watch list, featuring a breakdown of the 10 favorite horror movies from 10 renowned horror directors. We did a deep dive of the favorite horror movies from directors including Guillermo del Toro, Ari Aster, Jordan Peele, Quentin Tarantino, James Gunn, Rob Zombie, Martin Scorsese, and many, many more. Here you'll find a collection of each director's favorite horror movies, along with quotes about what they appreciated about the films, all in an easy-to-reference PDF that you can download absolutely free. Featuring a mix of well-worn classics and deep cuts, hopefully you'll discover some overlooked gems and look at old classics through new lenses. Download the 10x10 horror watch list for free by visiting nicktaylor.com/horrorguide. That's nicktaylor.com/horrorguide. Welcome to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. As always, each episode of the Nick Taylor Horror Show explores how today's horror filmmakers are getting their movies made while deconstructing their methods and career strategies into practical insights that you can use on your own horror filmmaking journey. Today, I am very psyched to speak with Ryan Turek, the VP of Development at Blumhouse and producer across many titles, including Imaginary, Night Swim, The Exorcist Believer, Megan, The Black Phone, Halloween, Halloween Ends, Halloween Kills, Freaky, Happy Death Day, and the list goes on and on. In this episode, Ryan gets into his very compelling origin story, which started in horror journalism and ended up with him becoming a very pivotal figure who's shaping contemporary horror cinema. Ryan also dives deep into the lesser-known sides of producing, as well as Blumhouse's process for developing projects, and we touch on Blumhouse's very exciting Halfway to Halloween Film Festival, a five-night screening series beginning this Friday, March 29th. Check out the link in the show notes to learn more about Blumhouse's Halfway to Halloween film series. Ryan is someone I've wanted to get on the show for a while, and I really enjoyed this conversation. His story is a real testament to the power of persistence and passion, as well as the importance of remaining true to yourself, which are all hallmarks of Ryan's career that have led him to one of the most important and coolest jobs in horror today. Please welcome Ryan Turek. So let's talk about Halfway to Halloween. Blumhouse is launching a five-day film festival where a number of your previous releases are coming back to the big screen for a series of one-night-only screenings. So each night beginning this Friday, March 29th, you guys are screening Sinister, The Purge, Ouija Origin of Evil, Insidious, and The Invisible Man at AMC Theaters. This is so cool. How did this come about?
There's a good chunk of audiences that have not seeing those films on the big screen. Now it's okay, thanks to AMC, people are allowed to go do that.
Yeah.
And I feel too, like when we announced this and we got into this initiative, I thought it was super fun because in LA or New York, there's tons of revival movies.
Oh yeah.
You know, like you can go see The Blob 88 somewhere at the New Bev or the Vista, and folks everywhere else are like, I want to see The Blob on a big screen. But here it's just like a younger audience who may have missed a film like Invisible Man or Insidious. They can go now into theaters and enjoy it with a wide audience, you know, like
yeah,
a active movie.
No, I'm particularly psyched to see Sinister on a big screen because I didn't get to see it.
Had you not seen it that way?
I'd never seen it that way.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude. Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. Especially, I'll never forget, I was still a journalist at the time when that movie came out, but the sound design of that movie...
Yeah,
it's brutal.
I went up and looked up all of those songs on Spotify, and they're just eerie to listen to. Yeah, the sound design of that is just insane.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Super psyched about Halfway to Halloween, and it seems to be a big effort from Blumhouse to bring people back into the movie theaters, which I feel is so important these days. So,
I think so too, and obviously horror is continuing to have a moment. And there's a lot of great diversity in the films that are out there. So let's just keep contributing to that, as well as celebrate the holiday that we love so much.
Yeah. And I feel like, obviously, when it comes to seeing a movie in a theater, horror, hands down, is the best shared experience.
Insidious is 13 years old now. Wow. And still there are scares in that film that are being replicated today, or still as effective today as they were back then.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun to see for audiences. And also, five films deep, people can go back and see, you know, where it all started. Mm-hmm. If they had just started watching Insidious 5 on Netflix or any other streaming service, they can go to the AMC and go check out Insidious.
Yeah, and I have a Stubbs pass.
So do I.
All right.
I just got one for the first time, and it's
Wow. Took you a minute.
Yeah.
They're great. Yeah, it's great.
It is, man. It is. It's super fun. It's just like now I need to carve out time to maximize it, but it's great to get out to the theaters, even on a school night.
Yeah. I like that it forces me to go see everything. That's the cool thing about it.
Yeah. I've been up. My Letterbox has been very busy.
Nice. The showings are going to be in 40 cities at over 100 AMC movie theaters across the United States, starting with Sinister on the 29th. Yeah.
Yeah. Friday to Tuesday, Sinister to Invisible Man, Insidious on Monday, Purge on Saturday, Ouija Origin of Evil on Sunday. And the thing that's fun about Ouija Origin of Evil is that Mike Flanagan did that for
us. Right.
And, you know, I feel like Flanagan has found his spotlight with television, mm-hmm. Obviously with Usher and Haunting. And so it's like, I feel like a lot of people pick up on his visual language and the scares from those films, but it's like, no, go to Ouija.
Yeah.
See Ouija, because you'll see seeds of stuff that wound up trickling into those shows that are very Flanagan-esque. That's super. It's always good to go back to a filmmaker's kind of starting points. Not that Ouija Origin of Evil was his starting point. He had other films, yes.
Yeah.
But in terms of theatrical films, I'm talking about.
I love that. I love like forensically tracing a director's early work, like seeing Kronos and going, oh yeah, all these little Guillermo del Toro signatures are all there. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Now, I'm really psyched. Were you part of the curation of which movies were going to be chosen?
Well, no, I was incited by the fact that Insidious is celebrating its 13th anniversary. We just merged with Atomic Monster.
Congratulations, by the way.
It just felt like thank you. They're a great team over there. They're incredible. And also, it's just get to see James Wan more often.
Yeah, could be wrong with that.
They're awesome. Yeah, no. But it was, it was kind of inspired by that. And, it's okay, let's reach back to the films that Blumhouse was known for back in the day, but then flash forward a little bit to Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. And Invisible Man felt right to put this on the slate because we have Wolfman coming up.
Yeah.
So, Lee is shooting that right now, and it just felt right to like remind audiences that we're doing another classic Universal monster movie, and this is how we did it with Invisible Man. Get ready for Wolfman. And I can't say much more than that, but it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm psyched. So you were in the very, very enviable position of being VP of development at Blumhouse. Would love to get an overall sense of your career history and what led to this.
I grew up on the East Coast, went to SVA in Manhattan, a School of Visual Arts grad, and shortly after moved to Los Angeles. And, through a series of circumstances, just wound up writing for a few websites. So there were some early websites way back in the day called creaturecorner.com. And then, part of the team that founded dreadcentral.com.
Yep.
But for me, it was a path to just keep my foot in the world of horror and write about horror movies and write about what I love. And also just like garner and hone in on a critical voice. I just love talking about scary movies, and would do so through pen pals in the early days and trade VHS tapes with folks I would meet out there. And then, the internet, when the internet came along and the websites came along, it just opened the doors to meeting new people and meeting new friends and meeting new fans. And then I realized, I was like, I can use a website to talk about scary movies and interact with more people. And because of the websites that I was working for, that just gave me accessibility to so many filmmakers out here and talent out here to interview them and get inside their head and just have access to filmmakers that I grew up with and idolized, whether it was Toby Hooper, John Carpenter, George Romero, Wes Craven, Dario Argento, Mick Garris. I've talked to them all, and they were all super cool. And then through that path, I started getting a little antsy about what I was doing and wanted to get out of that world and started putting my feelers out into the world of what else can I be doing? Not necessarily directing, not necessarily screenwriting or anything like that, but producing, because it was just like I was meeting everybody from talent to crew members. And I was like, what if I just put all of that to good use and I can be a producer and package projects? And along that path, along that way, I met Jason Blum, I met Brad Fuller, I met a couple other producers that I had been interviewing, but was also just friendly with. And yeah, and cut to probably a year after I started putting my feelers out there, Jason Blum was looking for a development exec, and I knew his assistant, and she was Chelsea Peters at the time. She was working for him, and now she's a filmmaker in her own right. And yeah, she put in a good word for me, and as did a few other folks. And I had a few meetings with Jason and his development team here, led by Cooper Samuelson. And yeah, and then it's almost 10 years ago.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a wild.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. What's so funny, I was just watching Aliens on 4K last night, and I realized that movie was such a part of my DNA. Like, I was 9 when I saw that film opening night in theaters. And I don't want to do anything else. I just want to work in scary movies.
Yeah.
And I want to champion scary movies. And horror is having a great time horror has peaks and valleys, and we've had a consistent peak for the last few years, which is great. So let's keep celebrating it.
There's so many things I love about your overall origin story. And I think one of the biggest ones, well, first of all, I had Chelsea on the show a couple of years ago when Satanic Panic came out. And she had told me that she had put in a good word for you, for Jason Blum. Yeah. And then you had put in a good word for her back when Dallas Sonier owned Fangoria. And that led to her directing Satanic Panic. I just love this sort of karma of that entire story. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Now she's got some more films in the works. So no, it's all everybody helping each other out.
Yeah. But then you coming on board as a development executive, right when you had gone to film school, obviously, but the majority of your career was mostly in journalism. So I feel like your story is giving a lot of people hope who may not have gotten an early foot in the door from day one or been given an initial opportunity. So I guess looking back 10 years, what do you think were some of the things that led to this position for you? Because clearly you were born to do it. But sometimes people have trouble finding the right path.
Yeah, listen, it's patience and passion. That's really what I think I would boil it down to. And obviously, I think I got lucky with Jason's outside the box thinking. Jason, like, he could have hired any other executive, but he was like, I want the guy that lives and breathes horror. And I'm very grateful for that. It's persistence and patience and passion. Things don't happen right away. From the time I moved out here, it's the time I got hired at Blumhouse. That was 14 years. And I just stuck to what I knew and what I wanted to do. Even though that kind of, what do you want to do? Which is the question I ask anybody who's coming out of film school or interns. You don't necessarily need to pick a very clear path because you don't really know until you dial into that passion. But there is going to be a point where an inflection point in your life where you're like, this is what I need to do. This is what I want to do. And producing was something that I was like, this is, at first I stumbled a little bit trying to figure that out. But once I started putting that out there and started reading scripts and started identifying things that I liked, that just energy just trickles out there into the world.
Yeah.
And I just stuck to my guns on it.
It's awesome. So 10 years into Blumhouse, I like asking producers what producers do because everybody's got a very different answer. There's very obviously the technical elements of just essentially keeping the film on rails and all of that.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what your answer is. And also, how has your definition of producing changed in the past 10 years versus what you thought producers do versus what you now know they do?
What's so funny, I was just saying to my wife when we were watching the Oscars, probably 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I would be like, why are these producers accepting the Best Picture award? I don't understand it. And this year I was like, I've gotten to the point where I now understand it.
I get it.
Producing is a lot. It's a lot of different things. It's identifying the right projects. It's putting the right team together. It's putting the right talent together. It's working with the line producers to make sure everything aligns budgetarily, making sure the crew is falling into the same headspace as the filmmaker. Everybody's unifying to work towards the director's vision. Well, in our case, making sure that the movie is super scary, making sure that it can play to a wide, fun audience. But it's a lot. It's a lot of different things, and it can change from day to day. One day you're on set and being a creative producer. The next day you're playing. You know, you're playing therapist, you're playing, it's a lot. It's a lot of different things. And that's why it's so fun to explain it, because you just have to sometimes use examples, like very specific examples of this is where we fell into a rut and I needed to do this, that, and the other. Or we found ourselves going over budget and we had to look at the shooting days and what we had left and how can we work with the AD to kind of restructure our days so we can start making our days. You're overseeing a lot, but relying on a lot of the creativity and talents of people in the various departments to just keep the train moving. And we're all working towards the same goal of telling the scariest movie possible and to support the filmmaker in every way possible. And sometimes it's just helping those departments align so that can happen. I say it's a lot over and over because it is. But there's a lot, like I said, there's just a lot of little pieces up there.
Well, you mentioned being a therapist. I feel there's a lot of under-recognized skills that producers need to develop that they probably don't necessarily learn in film school or know that they need to learn. Are there things like interpersonal skills that you think people who either are producers or want to be producers should work on? Like, what are some of those under-recognized skills producers do need to have?
Empathy and listening. Listening is such a key thing, and 100% it's listening. You're also, it's classic psychology kind of stuff that I never said I was great at, but you learn with every challenge.
Yeah.
But it's listening, it's understanding what people want. It's also working to get what you want as a producer to keep the train moving. There were a couple books that some friends have recommended over time. David Gordon Green had a great one that was very simple, but it was just trying to be zen too and not lose your temper, you know, which is, I think that is something that doesn't happen as often now. And I've had a lot of people, crew members, come up to me in the past and say, it's really great to have someone. I'm not patting myself on the back or anything. It's just, I just want to think about how people want to be treated, but it's just, I'd have crew members come up and say, it's really great to have you on set because you're just a great confidant to come over and talk about the challenges I'm facing in this department. And so you were able to help me out in this way, or thanks for aligning me, putting me in front of this person, because I don't know. It's just, like I said, on Night Swim, it was a fun experience because also Judson Scott from Atomic Monster was on there. So we were both just tag teaming, you know, some days he would focus on the departments and I would focus on assisting Bryce. And then we would like swap. No, it's just be kind, be cool, be professional and just make scary movies.
Sounds like a dream, man. Sounds like a real dream. Yeah. So how has Blumhouse changed in the past 10 years? Because I obviously have been following Blumhouse, and I saw Jason speak at South by Southwest a long time ago. And it was right when this sort of Blumhouse formula was being talked about a lot in the media, super low budget, established directors. How have things changed in the past 10 years? Or have they?
They certainly have. I feel like that there are films that have been like certain inflection points for Blumhouse. Get Out was one of them, where it was like, you took this horror company that was doing low budget horror and like Paranormal Activity, The Purge, Sinister. And then this film comes along that is a scary movie on its surface. But then Jordan Peele came in and Trojan horsed all this subversive subject matter and got people talking, and it was socially relevant. And that was a big thing. It was a reminder to everybody in the world that scary movies don't just have to be fun popcorn fare. They can also be thoughtful. You know, you can have your popcorn, but you can also eat your veggies too, and you can enjoy it. And then I would say Halloween, you know, was another big one, because that was diving into a franchise that had been around for decades, which was no easy feat, but I think we succeeded. And then, of course, there was like Five Nights at Freddy's, which is, you know, one of our big films. Yeah, you know, it's like we just keep growing and growing in terms of subject matter and the films that we want. It's, you know, directors leading the charge, creative freedom, scary movies that can reach wide audiences, and obviously be super thoughtful in our storytelling.
I talked to a lot of horror directors, and I feel like there is this sort of fine line when working with producers as a director where you want to stick to your vision and you want to fight tooth and nail to get the original idea done, but you also don't want to be labeled as difficult. So I'm wondering, how have you observed that bleeding edge sort of working out in favor for people? How have you seen directors who've been able to straddle that line of really being assertive and getting the shots and getting what they need and getting that very specific signature made to the point where sometimes you do have to be difficult, but without being labeled as difficult to the point where it might harm someone's career? Are there any insights on that balance?
Interesting question. And I say interesting question because I've never really battled with a filmmaker over it.
Okay.
The filmmakers bet on themselves here, you know, and we give them the creative freedom to tell the story they want to tell. However, my job is to just make sure that any thoughts or notes that I have are just in alignment with what the filmmaker is doing, what the film is.
Yeah.
And so never really had too much pushback. And if it was like, if there was something about a shot or we were running out of time, well, it's just about compromise.
Right.
But okay, you're going to get this, but understand when we land tomorrow, we might have to condense this coverage here, you know, because to make up for that lost time. Or, it's just all compromise, guys.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing. It really is. Yeah, I don't know how else to answer that, because I honestly have never dealt with a quote-unquote difficult director. Even if they were, you know, in the eyes of anybody else, if they were difficult, I mean, I'll tell you, they were probably right. You know, when I see a cut of the movie and I'm like, oh yeah, I bitched about that. But it's just, oh no, this scene's incredible.
Yeah.
So put faith in the creators. That's really it. And we always say when we're throwing out, you know, giving notes to somebody or just digging in creatively, it's just, we're not always right. Mm-hmm. But also just take what's good and leave behind what's bad.
Yeah.
It's always the case.
I guess the secondary part of that question is, how do you pick the directors that you want to work with? Because obviously talent is not everywhere, but omnipresent. But must be other things that you look for in the person.
Yeah, strong storytelling sense, strong visual sense, can control a set, can have a dialogue with actors, can get great performances. And you see this in the body of work that they have put out in the past.
Yeah.
And that's where we really search and look for filmmakers, is filmmakers who have got a little bit of a track record or have a really great strong debut under their belts, that we just look at it and go, they could speak our language. They could speak the scary movie language and just understand the emotions we need to see or feel throughout a film.
Cool. I feel like it's a perfect place to end. Ryan, this was awesome. Thank you so much.
Cool. Yeah, Nick. Yeah. No, happy to talk. And just a reminder, Friday is when Halfway to Halloween kicks off.
So yes. Everybody get your tickets.
Start with
now.
Sinister. Sinister, the most scary movie of all time.
That's right. Yeah, hook a heart monitor
says
up. And let's,
science.
Yeah, see what happens with your Aura ring when you watch it.
That's right. Believe science.
Cool.
All right, man. Good talking.
Thanks
to you.
Again, man. All right. Here, as always, are some key takeaways from this conversation with Ryan Turek. Number one, it all comes down to passion, persistence, and patience. When it came to his career, Ryan emphasized the importance of his persistence and staying true to his passion for horror. And even though he didn't always know exactly which path to pursue at all times, he kept a foot in horror throughout his career, which ultimately paid off in a huge way. His transition from horror journalism to film development showcases how diverse experiences can converge into a unique and powerful career path. Number two, empathy is an underrated producer skill. When it comes to producing, Ryan stresses the need for empathy and listening. Film sets can be a very high-stress environment, rife with a lot of people, a lot of egos, and endless potential for chaos. With so many volatile variables on set, being able to listen and have empathy ensures people feel heard, which makes everything go smoother. It sounds simplistic because it is, but the tenets of psychology apply to producing more than most other professions. Number three, be a confidant. Ryan mentions that people often cite him as a calm and cool confidant who can help navigate them through the day-to-day difficulties on set with comfort. This is a very important skill to develop as a producer, though not everyone is capable of it. So if you're not, it's advantageous to have someone like this around, because amid the chaos, someone capable of emotionally stabilizing people can ultimately stabilize the entire set. This all underscores how critical interpersonal skills are in managing production teams and bringing out the best in people and projects. Anyway, guys, thanks as always for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, why not share it with your friends and family on social media? Don't forget to follow the show at Nick Taylor Horror Show. That's Nick Taylor Horror Show on TikTok and Instagram. And don't forget to check out Blumhouse's Halfway to Halloween Film Festival beginning this Friday, March 29th at AMC Theaters across America. Check out the link in the show notes or visit amctheaters.com/events/halfway-to-Halloween. Thanks again for listening to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. We scare because we care.